Hey, what's up? This is The Scribe, and welcome to my new show, Scribbling with The Scribe. Now don't worry, the other show is still going to get done. Real Sessions with Oski and The Scribe is in full effect. This is something else I want to do. As you guys know, or some of you might know, I dibble and dabble in the entertainment business out here in Los Angeles, and over the years, I've met a lot of cool people. I've developed a lot of good friendships, and I've actually found some friends who are now my best friends. We are all very talented, very good people, and there's always a misconception about people out here in this business and what the definition of success is. And success isn't how many times you see somebody in the tabloids, or you know how much money they're making. Success is being able to support yourself with your career. And the people, there's a lot more people supporting themselves in their career that you may know, you may not know, or they may look familiar than the people that you do know. And those are the people who I want to concentrate on, people that are professional writers, professional actors, professional talent managers, whatever, man. I think that there has to be some respect and some actually paying some homage to that, because the Hollywood shit gets looked over too much, or looks at too much. And I think that the people who are just working professionals need to be highlighted. I went to film school, so I have no idea how to interview people. I didn't go to journalism school, so I'm just going as I go, and I'm gonna figure it out as it happens. So this might not sound like your professional type interview, but hopefully you get the gist of what's going on. My first guest on the pilot episode is actor Eugene Bird. Not only is he one of my best friends, and somebody who I respect a great deal, but he's also a fantastic actor. He's been in the game for a long time, man, and I mean, he's been in the game almost 30 years, which is crazy. You look at any other profession, and somebody who's done it 30 years, they're a professional, and you know, if you do it great, you're a legend. He's my first guest. You might have recognized him from 8 Mile. He's currently on the television show Bones. His resume is crazy. You got Anacondas. You got Cosby Show, Sesame Street, the movie Sleepers. I mean, the guy's resume is crazy, and I respect him. So, yeah, that's going to be the first episode. We talked for about an hour and 20 minutes or whatever. So check it out. Hope you like it. I'm planning on doing this show as whenever I can. It depends on when I can get guests or not. And people are busy. I'm busy. So if you, whenever we all have time to sit down and have a drink and shoot the shit, we'll do it. So that's it. Scribbling with the Scribe, episode 1. Check it out. And if you like it, man, let me know. Hit me up on scribeslife.com. Hit me on my Twitter, scribeslife. You can check out my short that actually Eugene starred in. It's on funnyordie.com. And just type in scribeslife. You'll figure it out. All right. So here we go. Episode 1, Scribes Life. Peace.
Being on the stage, the amount of training we have had, you know, Sidney Poitier, I was very fortunate. In fact, he came I talked to him before that, but I think it was when he came to Soldier's Play. And he said, "You're good."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and wow. I got a part in a movie in 1986. I called it The Nigger They Couldn't Kill.
Oh.
Yeah, he was supposed to be, he raped a white woman, and they tried to electrocute him, but it didn't work. And he became sort of a cult hero. No, not that one. That was the other awful one. But
yeah.
And then they tried to hang him, and they tried to do all this stuff. And I had a lot of training day in me. there were some Jewish people in the audition, and I said, yeah. They said, no, it's funny. It's like they hang them and then they can't. I said, yeah, like you bring some Jewish people into a room and they think it's a shower, but it's gas. Oh. And they said, right. I said, right, that ain't funny. So to me, it wasn't funny about putting a rope around my MF'ing neck either. I made a point. The guy was like, who the hell is this little nigga coming in talking like this? So anyway, make a long story long. I called Sydney and I was sick because he told me to call him. I said, man, they offered me $600,000 to play the nigga they couldn't kill. And he said, I'm not going to tell you what to do. He said, I'm not going to tell you that, Denzel. He says, but I can tell you this. The first two or three or four films you do in this business will dictate how you're perceived in this business. Mm-hmm. So you make a decision. You know, he didn't tell me what to do, and I give him credit for that. And I turned it down, and 6 months later, I got Cry Freedom and got an Oscar nomination. So it could have gone an entirely, you know, you never know. Mm-hmm. It could have gone, my whole career could have gone an entirely different way. Well, in a different way.
Okay, yeah. Ms. Davis?
And all the Jewish people now, I mean, just making a point. But I was dead serious about that because they were laughing. Everything. Like, oh no, it's funny. They electrocute him and then I could just see the poster with me with a rope around my neck. You know, I just had dreams about it. Like,
I have a question.
I love that wacky guy they tried to kill. Put it on your eyes. The roses on your face light up the sky. Those lips are colorful all of the time. And girl, that's fine, but I wanna know, do you mind? No makeup today. No makeup today. No makeup today. No makeup. And girl, that's fine, but I wanna know, do you mind? I know she about to ask me how she looked.
What's going on? This is a new show called Scribbling with the Scribe, and I am the Scribe. And what I wanted to do on this show, really, man, was to interview a bunch of my friends who are involved in the entertainment industry on different aspects: actors, writers, directors, managers, agents, whatever. And I just wanted to have, who are all African American, by the way, and what we wanted to do was just, instead of getting the Hollywood interviews and stories, just having a good conversation about how they got started, why they're in the business, and just their love for their craft. So this is a pilot episode. We've been sitting here for like an hour and a half trying to get this thing going.
Yes, sir.
The microphones weren't working.
Nope.
So we are recording from the microphone in the computer.
We're free balling.
We are free balling, baby.
Commander.
We are free balling. As you can hear, my first guest in this pilot episode is one of my best friends in the world. You might know him from the TV show Bones, 8 Mile. The brother's resume is crazy. I mean, Anacondas. If you old school and watch the Cosby Show or Sesame Street, I'll let him tell you his resume. But my first guest and my best friend is Mr. Eugene Bird.
Yeah, man.
What's up, brother?
Hey, brother. I am chilling. I got this Jack Daniels. I like to tell Jack Daniels, thank you for making this Tennessee Honey.
This Tennessee Honey.
It's on ice.
It is on ice.
With a splash of water.
I was kind of hating on it at first.
You were.
Yeah, I was.
You were. I remember when I first brought it to our friend's July 4th party.
Yeah.
And you were like, man, I don't know about that.
It's cool.
I was like, man, you need to put it in. Remember that white boy? I told you that white boy.
The white boy knew
was
what
hawking.
He knew what time it was.
He had a little taste, and it was like crack.
He might have been Jack Daniels' nephew or something.
Oh, man. Jack Daniels' nephew. He wasn't cracking like that. It was like that episode of the Boondocks when they created the
Krispy Kreme.
The Krispy Kreme.
The Luther.
The Luther. The Luther. This is what crack must taste like.
Hey, man. That shit was fun. Hey, I saw a Luther one time at the State Fair. At the State Fair. They were selling it.
You sure?
I'm positive.
Because I just thought the shit was cracked.
No. They sell that. They start, you know, they start frying butter now. Mm. Yeah. It's crazy.
And somebody's making, some dude made a fried peanut butter jelly. No. Fried Kool-Aid.
Oh, hell no.
Fried Kool-Aid donuts. Man, go on YouTube.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Find this dude. He's making a killing, actually. So
That's crazy.
I don't want to taste it because I feel like my heart will explode.
You know, I'm not going to lie. When I was home, I did try a fried cheeseburger.
How the hell do you do that?
Is they wrapped it in some kind of like dough or whatever with the ground beef, the cheese, the onions, deep fried that bitch.
And?
It's kind of good. It was kind of good.
There's really not many things that aren't
good fried.
Fried.
Yeah.
That's why it's bad for your health.
We should start frying Jack Daniel's honey.
Oh, man. No, man. That's like, wouldn't that be like a meth lab?
That would be methods.
That would be a meth.
Yeah, there we go. Well, man, I just want to thank you, first of all, for doing the show with me.
Oh, come on, man. You know how we do. Just
taking a risk on your boy, man. I appreciate it.
It's not a risk.
It is, well, it's a risk because these microphones didn't work.
Oh.
So,
other than that risk.
What kind of janky situation we got going here?
Hey, man, I think it's still going to sound good.
Yeah, I do too, man. So I guess the first question is, man, you're an actor.
Yes.
You're a career actor.
Yes.
How'd you get started?
When I was seven. I was always one of those like kids that parents would get pissed off at because they had way too much energy.
Mm.
And I remember one time my mom, it always sets it off. My mom could never find me when we used to go to the mall.
Hilarious.
So I used to either stand next to the mannequins and just like freeze, get in a freeze pose.
That's hilarious.
Next to the mannequins, or I would be telling Eddie Murphy jokes.
Wow.
In the middle of a bunch of white people. And they weren't just those. You know Eddie Murphy.
You're talking about Eddie Murphy raw, delirious.
Delirious. It was delirious jokes. I'd be like, yes. I said, you want some pieces of ice cream? Psych. You ain't got no ice cream. And then I would say some shit like shit. Right. There we go. And that motherfucker, whoa, baby, stop.
So how'd you get access to seeing that stuff?
Well, you know, I do have an older brother.
Right, there you go.
He let me see certain things. I mean, hey, and then, you know, sometimes you go into your parents' like closet, kids are nosy.
Yes.
And you find tapes and you put them in a machine and you start watching.
All right, I saw it too. I'm just asking how you found your stash.
Oh, well, I found my stash. And my parents had a super 8mm reel.
Wow.
Of things. Yes.
That's pretty gangster.
Oh, yes.
And
I shouldn't see.
Oh, things.
Yes.
Oh, you mean quote unquote things.
Quote unquote things.
Yeah.
My mama's not going to hear. So
yeah, right.
Good.
Hilarious, man. So you started doing the mannequins and all that stuff.
And then my mom and my sister thought, well, first my mom was getting tired of all that energy. And so my sister was like, Mom, we should put him in acting class. And I was like, you think he'll like that? So it was really between my mom and my sister. And they sent me to this acting class with this man, Rodney Robb, in Philadelphia, because I'm from Philly. And he had his acting class at this place called I can't believe I'm blanking right now. It's only because I'm tired.
Yeah.
And we were at the Actor Studio. And, that might be his new place. But he has an Actor Studio. So we're sitting there, and then he decided to take me to his wife, Edie Robb, who owned a company at the time called Talent Works.
Mm.
And, you know, the rest is history, man. I've been doing this, this will be my 29th year in November, man.
And that's amazing.
Years.
Actually, man, what really inspired me to do the show, man, I was browsing on your IMDb one day, and I was just like...
Stalker.
I was stalking. I was IMDb stalking. Ooh. And, you know, I clicked off Halle Berry, and then somehow I got on.
You should never click off Halle Berry.
Yeah, I didn't. I just opened a new page. But what happened was, I was looking, and I was seeing that you've had damn near a 3-decade-long... Four, if you just go 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2011, 10s.
Yeah.
So, and how remarkable that is, especially being in a minority, and then especially being somebody who started as a kid,
yeah.
who's had a career that's been long, and you haven't strayed away, mm-hmm. where a lot of child actors get into trouble, or lose themselves, get caught up in the fame or whatever. You've been even keeled the whole time, man.
Wow,
and I want to tell you that's remarkable. And I
appreciate it, man. You know what, man? That's a testament to my mom and my dad. You know, God rest his soul.
Mm-hmm.
My dad used to take me everywhere. My mom couldn't do it. It was just me and my dad up and down the turnpike, going from Philly to New York.
Right.
And my mother used to always tell me, if you don't want to do this, don't. I always felt a reverse psychology. I used to tell all the time, like, you really don't. Once I got older, I realized, well, man, you don't really want me to get out of this business. You just want me to make the decision myself and try to, you know, psychologically.
But that's responsible, though. That's a responsible mother right
well,
there.
Well, she just, my mother has always been supportive, and she's always wanted me to express myself and not take shorts in life.
Right.
So if there was anything that I wanted to do and I loved, she wanted me to do it.
Okay.
And my father, basically the same thing, man. You know, acting is hard. I mean, everybody thinks you can, you know, it's easy being acting. You just, you know, jump in front of a camera and you do something. And it's, but it's harder than that because,
yeah,
especially when you're a kid. I have a great nephew right now.
Uh-huh.
And my mom calls me up and talking on that baby talk. She's definitely a great grandmother now. And
that's awesome.
she was telling me one time, she just, you know, she said, oh, the little boy, he's, oh my God, he's so great. He's just like you when he was a kid. And I went, don't do it.
Right.
Don't put him in the business. It's not because the business isn't great and it's not something he can learn. It's the fact that, you know, if he's going to do it while you're young. And then as soon as you get to a certain age, I think he should be out of business.
Pull it, okay.
Pull out. Have a childhood.
So, did you take a hiatus coming up?
I never took a hiatus, man.
So, is that something that you regret that? Or is it something that...
A part of me does. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great things that came out of being an actor.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of great things in my life for that. But I do believe that there are things that I missed out on because I didn't have a real childhood.
Okay.
Because I was always around adults. I was always around adults. I was always traveling. I was always acting. So my childhood, in my opinion, and my mother will get upset for this, but in my opinion, because it's not her fault, it was short.
Mm.
Or it was altered.
Okay.
Like I didn't play any sports. You know, and I'm a huge sports fan. You know that.
Yes.
And the fact that I didn't play any sports, I didn't play football, which was my first love, and then basketball, which was my second love. You know, I missed out on that part of life. But there are things, other things that I did. So I can at least say I've been all around the world.
Yeah, you've had experiences that a lot of people don't have in a lifetime. So I will say there's a trade-off. I wouldn't say that you were better for having one or not good for having the other. You know what I mean? But I can understand that. What was your first, what was the first gig you had?
First gig, man. It's funny. I'm never going to tell. I'll tell you. It's funny thing is I found it the other day.
Oh, but anyway, is it on YouTube?
We won't have a conversation.
Hilarious.
But it was a commercial. And it was all of us young little kids singing like old 50 songs.
What, like the Time Life?
No. It was for candy. This is for like bars, like candy bars.
Hilarious.
Not a real candy bar. It was a health candy bar.
Oh, okay.
That's why I'm not going too far. And, you know, I don't care. People probably gonna find it. And you're gonna see my teeth look like I sucked my thumb, so my teeth were doing this whole sort of like...
Oh, these are the hungry hippo thing.
Yeah, hungry hippo. Like, you can chomp down. My teeth did not really connect. But it was this commercial called Hershey Nutrail Granola Bars.
And Hershey what?
Hershey Nutrail Granola Bars.
Okay.
And what I remember about it is my cousin was up there, and he came to visit me on set. And next door, it was Curtis Blow... The Fat Boys.
Wow.
Houdini.
Right.
Shooting basketball.
Are you crazy? That's hilarious.
They were next door. My cousin was over there eating pizza with the Fat Boys.
That's dumb.
And I was upset. I was upset. He would come back over. He's like, yo, you know who I was just hanging with? My cousin Devin.
Right.
Robinson. He kissed my ass. So, but he was in the back. He's like, I just came back. I was hanging with Curtis Blow and you know the Fat Boys. He didn't give a damn that I was on set. All he cared about was next door was the Fat Boys.
That's classic,
Curtis Blow, man. Doing, I'm talking basketball.
I do. I remember that video of Jerry Curls cracking and all the break dancing. That was a moment. Yeah,
yep, man. Silver Lake Studios, man. That's where we shot.
So was that in New York?
Yeah, it was in New York.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember where in New York, but it was like in New York.
Yeah, I'm man. Yeah, I just thought that was like, like I said earlier, man, I just think it's remarkable that you've had a long career like that, and that like you won a few people, and I think that's something that we as entertainers shouldn't take lightly, but people who are on outsiders looking in shouldn't take lightly either, because you know, because they all think it's some old overnight success thing, and somebody like you who's this is your craft. You've done it for 30+ years, almost 30 years, man. And he's not old. He's not like I'm talking to someone who's 40 years old.
Nah. You know, nah. I'm 36 now. I have no problem with saying that.
Yeah.
I fucking look great. Yeah. Thank God. Thank you, Mama.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Daddy. He can still play 20 years old right now.
Easy right now. So, you know, the thing is, man, is that, you know, I was talking to somebody today. I was at the barbershop, and me and this cat, you know, we were politicking, and we just started talking about how the fact that nowadays, man, people, they either become complacent after a while, or they didn't even have real love for what they do. I have no problem, because I love this business. You know, I get tired of it sometimes, because, you know, you want to expand your horizon, you want to do different things, you want to grow as an artist, because at the end of the day, I'm an artist before anything. You know, I'm an actor, but I'm also a writer, because I like poetry, you know, photography.
And he's very good at that. And I'm not just saying that as his friend. I'm just being real. He has a great eye for photography. And
I appreciate that.
And man, shit, if you want the right, man, you can probably outright me.
Nah. You know what? You read Outliers. You know about Outliers, right? Where it takes 10,000 hours to become a master.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, you write way more than me. And the fact is, you're talented, man. I mean,
well,
the one thing I know about all of us, all my friends, is I'm happy to say that not only are all of you great people, but every single one of y'all are talented in your own rights. You know, and when you love something, man, I love to watch all of y'all work hard, because every single one of y'all work hard.
I think that's like they say, the birds of a feather flock together, or like I believe in like positive, good energy, and like you can be in a room of 100 people, but you will find the people who have the right energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a testament to our friendship and to our circle. We all might have some asshole tendencies every once in a while, but I think
we all do.
Yes, we do. But we all are very passionate about what we do, and respect each other's talent.
Yeah, and opinions.
Yeah, I'm blessed that I found you guys out here. Yeah, man, it's a good thing, man.
Yeah.
So, yo, let's take a quick break. We got the first 15 minutes in, man. We're going to try to recheck this audio, since we're doing it bootleg style.
Yeah, that's all right. And I'm a tag for the prick right here.
Yeah.
Continue my Jack Daniels once again, Tennessee Honey. Thank you.
Shout out. And, you know, if we do come back, then we're just sounding good.
Yes, sir.
And holla back. It's Scribbling with the Scribe. Standing on the verge of your success, steady bearing your soul to the world you undressed, surrounded by your success swords and the whores you ain't fucked yet. That's how I was getting it. I don't need the limelight, that's young nigga shit. I'm an OG and the G is for gentlemen. Yes, fine, Tigger spit, Amazon flame, watch knife rekindle it, cause iPad versus with the wisdom of my innocence lost. Two brothers, two peas in a pod, two comeback seasons apart. Take it back to when I be in the park and rhyme till I couldn't see in the dark. So silly niggas better be on your guard. Longest breath is in my being, I'ma be on my job with good music, got that good feel. A good meal, leafy greens, two veggies, protein and a starch, and I'm out. Right where I thought I'd be, it's another part of me, and the world's so sad to see that I'm not here anymore. Wind blowing through the trees. And we're back. This is Scribbling with the Scribe.
Yes, sir.
And we got the first guest in the pilot, my boy Eugene Bird.
Yo.
What it do.
And we're back.
All right, that's the question I would ask, because you were saying that you didn't want your family to encourage your nephew or your great nephew to join the business. If you could do it over again, would you do it again?
Yes. I mean, I love this business, so I mean, it's not that I wouldn't do it again.
Right.
It's that would I do it differently?
Okay.
I would have taken some time off, man. I would have probably taken off time in college. and enjoyed my college career, you know, which I didn't really do it. I mean, I got to college. I went to NYU. And they frowned upon you working.
Did they really?
Yeah, they wanted you, they wanted people to say that if you blew up or whatever, that you went to Tisch.
Right.
But they don't want you working.
That's hilarious.
They don't want you to do it, but they want to put your poster up.
That's hilarious.
If you happen to work during the time you're there. They frowned upon it, even though that's what you. I was going to school for.
Exactly.
I was going for a theater arts major.
I had a buddy, he was going, he was at Harvard, and once he was selling his first script, and he was just right in the middle of the semester, and they were saying, like, he was torn between, like, going to work on the script some more and do the rewrites and it was, or continuing school.
Mm-hmm.
His professor was like, you came to school to become a working writer. He said, yeah? Well, you're working. You can come back and finish it. And this is at Harvard.
See, that's Harvard. You know why? They're smarter.
Yeah, there we go.
NYU, hey, I'm just being real about it.
Yeah.
It just didn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense.
And this is a side note. I've had a couple problems with a few of my ex-professors who I thought I was cool with while I was there. And then after I got out and I kind of went back to reach back to them just to talk to them or have some advice, get some advice, they haven't been real responsive, man.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? And then...
So they were done with you. Right? Your tuition, basically you paying them is over.
Yeah, maybe so. Or there's a good friend of ours, you know, who signed my DVD right there. And he said, well, it's real simple. Those who can do.
I was thinking that, but I didn't want to say that.
Yeah.
I was sitting there thinking it because there's a, when I was in college myself,
mm-hmm.
I had a acting teacher who I knew he hated me. He hated me. I don't know why he hated me. He hated me and this other cat. And one day we both had to do a scene for him. Because what happens, he was always cool with the girls, and but the guys, he would get some bullshit ass,
of course he would.
You know, critic. He was like, "Oh, Cindy, you were fantastic. You know, the way you did that was beautiful. And you try this." Then he turned to the guy, "You could breathe less. Okay, let's have 15-minute break." So when he had two guys get together, and the two guys who everybody thought were really good, and that we were finally going to do a scene together,
right.
They thought we would be great working together. We did a scene. And that dude sat there for a second, and then he looked at both of us. He said, "You know what you guys are? You are creatively organic before you're organically creative." He said, "If this was Saturday Night Live, you would be fantastic. Let's break for lunch."
Wow.
And me and him looked at each other. He was pissed.
Right.
And I looked at him, I said, "Did you expect anything different from this guy?"
Yeah.
He's mad because he went to college with Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, well.
And unfortunately, he's a fucking piece of shit that happens to be teaching us who were better than him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's upset that he's an ugly fucking dude. Sorry, Robert Castle. I said your name. You're a clown. And that's what it was. It was like at that time, it's like, look. My friend was extremely good. I think he's an empathic actor.
Wow, okay.
He just knew how to... I loved watching him work when we were in class.
Yeah.
And me, I had just been doing it so long, and so I was learning a new style, and it was hard to learn. And this guy, instead of really teaching us, he hated. And, you know, whatever he's doing now, it most likely is this... maybe he's teaching... dinner theater. I don't know.
Yeah, he's
but I've moved on in my life.
Keyword is teaching.
Keyword is teaching. Which, I'm not shitting on teachers.
Yeah, I'm not shitting on that. But
I had great teachers. But that dude, he's definitely the epitome of those who can do and those who can't teach and hate
right
while they're doing it.
Yeah, it sucks when you experience that because you always has. We've always had like a good admiration for teachers.
Yeah,
and so when you somebody like who you felt believed in you at a certain time,
mm-hmm.
you go back to them and like, yeah, I'm still kind of wanting to seek some knowledge. I'm, you know, even though I'm doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't get embraced like you feel like you expect, it's a letdown.
I was a complete letdown, yeah. Man. I mean, whenever I get an opportunity, when actors come up to me and they're new to the game, I try to impart some kind of knowledge.
Right.
You know, sometimes I don't have the time because I'm either at work or they caught me at a time where I just didn't have the time to give them a full conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to impart something and leave them with something that hopefully will help them in the future because, you know, you got to pay it forward. You know, I had great experience. You know, one of the things before I got to class, because I've been in it so long, is I worked with actors who were great, who were wonderful. I worked with Cleavon Little, God bless his soul, and Moses Gunn.
Mm.
And they imparted upon me some information and some knowledge. You know, I've worked with Bill Cosby. I've met Sidney Poitier. You know, I met legends.
Yeah.
You know, legends in black cinema, in black Hollywood. And mm-hmm. had the opportunity to rub shoulders with them and to have a conversation, have conversations with them and at least figure out what it is about them that they've lasted so long or they've been respected for so long. And you know, at the end of the day, man, it's longevity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about... Sometimes everybody wants to make a big splash. They want to become a huge superstar. And, I mean, it should always be about the work. It should always be about the work and providing great work, not providing great work that splashes so you can make a name for yourself, but that you have created a career and that you've gained respect. And I respect, when I go to the set, I was taught to always respect people from the lowest rung of what they consider. And the, you know, thing like when background artists come up to you, I respect them. I respect background. I respect casting. I respect wardrobe, hair, grips, everybody. Because the fact is, we're all doing this together. And now, we're all supposed to make a project.
I say, like, and I respect, you know, I do admire that about you because we were at, I came to see when you shoot a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was kind of like, damn, this guy remembers everybody's name. Like, the PAs, like, everybody, like, he was cool with everybody, man. And, like, me, like, because when I used to do PA work,
mm.
like, it was hard for me to recall people's names who were, like, over me. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the pecking order of set, you know what I mean? Like, usually talent is higher, is pretty high. You know, you probably get the producers, director, and then talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought it was remarkable that you recalled everybody's name, and it brought a certain morale to the set too. Like when the people who are quote unquote higher on the totem pole take time to remember, just remember the name.
Uh-huh.
It'll make people work harder. It'll make people feel more involved. It'll be like a family atmosphere.
Absolutely. Nobody wants to work on a set or a job where they feel that their contribution is not respected.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
It's just small. And, you know, one of the biggest actors in the world, you know, I hear he does it at a level that is, but that's why he's one of the biggest movie stars in the world. Tom Cruise supposedly looks everybody in the eye, shakes their hand, asks their name more than once so he can remember it.
Wow.
And then he goes and he knows everybody's name on set. And it's admirable. People want to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
But you also want to work with them. You want them to know you respect their work because guess what? You need them and they need you. You know, it's a moving piece.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to respect everybody on it. I mean, but I was brought up in a different time. You know, now cats, nowadays, I don't know if they do that. You know, when I hang up my clothes in wardrobe or I bring it to them, they are... It's incredulous to them because they're like, well, did you work in theater? Because that's what you do in theater.
Oh, okay.
You know, everybody's working together. Things are being taken. You know, people are trying to clean up. You know, you hear about people that are leaving their clothes all over the place and they leave and, you know, they got to come in and pick up their clothes like they're children.
Right.
And, you know, those people are parents to you being a child.
And that's
so I appreciate that, man, because that's the one thing that I like to have fun.
That was the biggest draw to me. One of the biggest draws to me trying to get into this business. Despite like on top of this being creative and work and trying to make art.
Mm-hmm.
Like once I first got on my first real set, it was the camaraderie
mm-hmm.
that drew me in. And being an ex-jock, it was like I felt like I was back home. I can feel that. Yeah, I mean, like, when you got a group of people working together for if you're in the right frame of mind for one thing, mm-hmm. and that's for the project. Trying to make something
common goal.
Trying to make something great. And it felt familiar to me, and I was like, it curbed that hunger I was looking for after leaving sports, man. So I totally understand what you're saying with that, man.
Well, that's why I think that's why we both love sports.
Yeah.
Is because it's the ultimate team game.
Yes.
I mean, of course, you have such scenarios where, you know, somebody can go one-on-one and win. That's mostly in basketball. You can't do it in football. Right. Football's, to me, the ultimate team sport because if the quarterback don't get the wide receiver the ball, you can't do nothing with it. If the wide receiver doesn't catch the ball, the quarterback can't do nothing with it either. So right. everything's a moving piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing in business. I mean, in show business, man. Everybody's got a job to do, and everybody should be respected for that job that they do.
Yeah.
And that's why you felt so great about when you if somebody said, "Hey, man, you know, Terry, oh, how you doing? What's going on?" And they're talking to you because you're like, oh, so he's not a prick.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? He's a good actor. And I, you know, because you don't want to know that the people that you find to be really cool are pricks.
Nah. That's the worst.
It's hard, yeah. man. Because you're like, I respect you as an artist. I don't like you as a person.
I got a rule. I don't want to meet my quote unquote heroes.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to meet people who I admire because, like, the chances of them letting you down are greater than the chances of them impressing you.
Oh, they're huge.
Yeah.
But you got to realize they're humans.
Yeah, they are humans.
They're human beings, and they are fallible. And, you know, to get to a certain level, man, you've got to leave a wake in your awake. Certain people have to leave a wake.
Yeah.
You know, there's some bodies that have been buried.
Yes, they are. Yes, they
are. To get to certain places. I think in some ways you got to be ruthless.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be ruthless, man, but you have to look at it like, I look at it like this, man. It's like, me chasing what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
I put a lot of things on hold
mm-hmm.
that I really didn't plan on putting on hold when I was 21, 22.
Like what? What are you
saying? Starting a family.
Yeah.
Super wanting to settle down.
Yeah.
Provide, be able to, like, consistently provide for a wife type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you look at your peers you grew up with,
mm-hmm.
Who have the nice little corporate job and all that stuff, man, have the benefits and shit,
mm-hmm.
and they're comfortable now, and it's like, yeah, here I am, 33,
mm-hmm.
and I do the math, I'm like, oh, I had a kid right now, I be 51 and get out of high school. You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm not having any kids now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is adding another few years on that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I want to kind of whoop my kids' ass in basketball, and you know, there's a lot of things that there's a lot of sacrifices involved.
Absolutely.
And people on the outside look at it like we're out here just having fun and games, and they look at the end result, or they might check a few pictures on Facebook
mm-hmm.
and feel that
you're living a life.
And I'm not. I'm not.
But then again, turn that mirror around. Turn them glasses around and look in that direction. Because you know what? Those people may look comfortable.
Right.
It, like we always say, the grass ain't always green. It looks green.
Right.
Get over there, and you're like, this is a little shade of shit.
Yeah.
You know, because we all look at everybody else's life as probably ideal, like they did what they had to do. And then you find out some of their lives aren't great. But if you're doing what you love to do,
yeah,
and you're willing to make the sacrifices to achieve those things, then sometimes those sacrifices are for the greater good.
Yeah.
And they are, and you don't want to be a father to some child and your child looks at you and realizes you're just unhappy.
Yeah.
And that you're not doing what you want to do. Your wife is looking at you. She's thinking, my God, he's not doing what he wants to do. And I don't want to live a life like that. And I think that's what is interesting about our friends is mm-hmm. that I don't think any of us want to just settle for good
yeah.
or comfortable or okay. We want to settle for great, legendary, fantastic.
On all aspects.
On all aspects.
Yeah.
I think if you... if you settle, you know, hey, that's you.
Right.
I can't do it.
Yeah, no.
I don't want to settle. And I've lost a lot of, I can't say lost a lot of my life because I'm 36 years old, but I've lost time because there's things that I've done that I didn't do because of some fear or whatever, and you can't do that.
No.
You have to attack life on what you want with all your heart. And that's just real, man. I don't think we can do it any differently than that.
No, I agree. Well, you can't do it any differently if you're expecting greatness.
Yeah.
And like you said, we all expect greatness because yeah. that's your benchmark. That's what the people who you looked at or mm-hmm. people who you watched or you admire, they were great in your eyes.
Absolutely.
So you was like, you know what? Yeah, I want to carve my own path. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And create great. I want to be able to give the amount of joy that I experienced to somebody else.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And in order to do that, it's got to be fantastic. And it takes full concentration. It takes full dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And shit, you gotta want it.
Oh, you gotta want it.
You gotta want it, brother.
You gotta want it.
You got to want it.
I will say it on record. Kobe Bryant is a transcendent talent. He would go down as one of the greatest sports figures. I think he will be. And the second greatest shooting guard of all time. Because we all know who the first greatest shooting guard of all time is.
It's Terry Jenkins.
Hate Michael Jordan, baby.
Michael Jordan.
So, you know, but you got to look at, I was talking about that today. Kobe Bryant works hard.
He works hard.
There is not one part of his game he's satisfied with. Because while you're sleeping, he's working.
Yeah.
And same thing when I see, like, somebody, Will Smith. Will Smith said something in an interview. He said, I see myself on a treadmill and somebody else on a treadmill. And I'm thinking, we're both on this treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
I will die on this treadmill. Because one of us is getting off. And it won't be me.
That was a hell of an interview, man. That was a real talk, though.
That's real talk.
Yeah.
Because you got to think, man. You got to sit there and you got to say to yourself, what do you stand for? Because
mm-hmm.
if you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for everything.
Yep.
I mean, that's just right. Will you die for something? Because we live in a world right now where everybody is questioning, and they're questioning their values, and people's values change all the time.
Yeah.
And what do people stand for nowadays? I don't know. I feel as we get older, we have to stand for something. Well, to have a constitution, to have something that makes us want to go hardcore.
Well, the people that that we gravitate towards, and the people who are in our circles, mm-hmm. and the families we come from, like they stood for something.
Oh, absolutely.
And we stand for something because we have a certain integrity about what we create,
mm-hmm.
what we accept,
and what we will and won't do.
Right, and not knocking people who don't have the same integrity because everybody has a different bar. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to write certain things. You're not going to act on certain things, and it's integrity. And if you listen, you know exactly what we're kind of talking about.
Yeah,
or whatever. I was talking, and this is kind of going back to what we was just talking about previously.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody about wanting to pursue this kind of profession
mm-hmm.
and the kind of dedication it took.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is like the only profession in the world where you're competing with people all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's nobody who sits there, who works and who lives in Taiwan and mm-hmm. says, you know, one day I want to work for IBM. One day I want to work for Apple. One day, they might say, I want to work in the computer industry and make a lot of money.
Yep.
But they don't sit there and be like, I want to work. Nobody's sitting there dreaming about working for, you know, Sony in Zimbabwe. But there's somebody in Zimbabwe right now wanting to be an actor.
Or some entertainer.
Yeah, some kind of entertainer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, not only, because you're not competing this with people who are in your city
mm-hmm.
or in your state. You're competing with the world.
There you are.
So, like, to be successful, you, if that scare, like, if that kind of competition scares you, then you shouldn't probably do it.
It takes a tough skin, and even when you have the tough skin, it can still bleed.
Yeah,
because
bleeding is good.
I mean, hey, man, like Bruce Lee. I don't think Bruce Lee got, you know, in movies. I don't think Bruce Lee got really into a good rhythm until he like saw blood and licked it, and then was like, okay, I think we're about to get in now.
There we go.
I think we're about to get in now. We're about to do our thing. I have to answer this real fast.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break, real quick. Scribbling with the Scrappies. Back, sometimes cell phones ring, and you know, we gotta answer the thing. So, it's Scribbling with the Scribe. I'm the Scribe here with Eugene Bird. What's cracking, man? I want to ask you a question as far as like when you were first coming up as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start taking classes first, or did you just jump into it?
I took classes when I was 6, 7.
Okay.
And then after that, I was in.
Okay.
You know, I jumped in. I think I had good success as a kid. And then when I went to college, then I went to Tisch.
Okay.
And then I went to Strasbourg, and then I started trying to learn method acting, which was a little difficult, because I thought I knew everything when I went there. I just thought I knew everything, man.
Right.
So it was. I was gonna ask you why you put those on.
I put the headphones back.
He wants to feel comfortable. So fuck. He just put his headphones on, even though the headphones aren't working right
now.
That's
hilarious.
But you know, sometimes people feel comfortable doing what they usually do.
Right.
And usually, he records with headphones.
Yeah. I was like, I don't hear it. This is not working. Anyway. So yeah. Okay. That's okay. So what was it like? Is there a moment at any point where you felt totally comfortable doing what you were doing, and then do you remember that moment? And like, where you feel like, you know, I belong, this is like what I do, or have you always felt like that?
Actually, no. For a while, especially when I was a kid, I was like, do I really want to do this? Because it was hard, man. It was hard. You know, you have rejection. You know, as a kid, you know, rejection's hard, man. You don't know what to do with it sometimes, but you learn from it.
Right.
I kind of knew this is what I wanted to do when I set a goal for myself that I wanted to do Cosby.
Oh.
And I wanted to do Cosby, before I was 16. And I did it before I was 16.
That's awesome.
And while I was there, because it was my favorite show when I was a kid, and I was there, I was saying to myself, okay, I can do this. Because Bill Cosby, at one point, it was me, Merlin Santana, God bless his soul, Yonaka Doyle, and Keenan. I mean, we all were sitting there, and we were like, Cosby went out to the audience, and he said, I just want y'all to know that these five actors are the best young actors I've ever had on my show.
Wow.
And we all got quiet.
No pressure.
And, like, and it was, I think, our first episode that we were going to do, but he had watched all of our, our network run-throughs, our studio run-throughs, and cast run-throughs. So I guess he just felt comfortable. And my character got written in.
Really?
I was Eugene on Cosby.
Yeah, I do remember that. And actually, what's funny, I do remember, before I met you, I remember your character on that episode.
In the episode at the community center, or when I had an afro, and no, I had the box haircut with the clean sides.
No, I remember you with Theo's kids.
Yeah, with Theo's kids, man.
Yeah, I remember that.
And like I said, man, that's when I knew.
That's awesome.
This is what I think this is what I want to do, because I watched how we made the audience feel, and how he made the audience feel, and just the energy.
just
it was great.
I can't even imagine. I mean that was my first show coming up too, man. Like yeah. When that show, I want to be able to write something as great as that. That's like my benchmark. So
man, and that's the thing, man. We were just, you know, there's not many shows like that.
No.
You know, Damon Wayans tried to do it with My Wife and Kids.
He did.
He did. I mean, he tried to do it. I just think it was a different time when that show, his show came out. It was a different time. It was a, you know, we need that now. We need some of those. We need, like, you know, Rock was good.
Rock was fantastic.
Rock was good because he showed a totally different side mm-hmm. of that whole Cosby situation. He showed a different side of that. And, you know, those shows don't really exist anymore.
And I think they need to exist, especially with how times are today. Because yeah. you meet a lot of people who are our age, and they were like, yo, I kind of admire the Cosby Show, or I went to a historically black college.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, I wanted to go to college because I watched A Different World.
Yeah, man. Which was great.
Yeah, it was a fantastic show.
Yeah.
So you have to look at what... certain forms of entertainment can mean to a society mm-hmm. and have the influence. And because it's not here now, in a time that we really need positive images,
mm-hmm.
not just of black people, but just of people in general.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there. So I always think there's always going to be a room for something like that. It's just a matter of when the time that the network feels it needs to take a risk doing that. But...
Only HBO, FX do those kind of risks. Maybe Showtime too. Dexter's one of my favorites.
But those risk creatively, or as far as like risk, as far as putting something that's nurturing out. Because I love Dexter. I love yeah. Entourage. I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. But those are vulgar shows. Those
yeah.
are show, but those are shows that have influenced my writing.
Yeah.
I love The Shield. I was a Shield fan. The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
I can't let my like I got a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
But I can't let a kid, if I had a kid, watch that show.
That's true. I mean, I think being risky creatively and risky, you know, what did you say?
I forgot.
That's terrible. I'm sorry. We done had a couple.
That's me. That's me. I didn't say shit.
But, you know, I think they go hand in hand when you go, you want to show something, you want to take a risk in a creative way and take a risk with something kind of family-oriented.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, unless you're CBS, which seems to do all the family shows mm-hmm. and family-type shows, there hasn't been an edgy, family-oriented show. You know what I mean? There hasn't been one of those. There hasn't been creatively a way to redesign the whole Cosby idea.
Right.
You know, because right now, there are kids, I've heard kids today see the Cosby Show and think it's corny. Because that's not their reality now. You know, yeah. It's not the 80s. You know, we wanted to see that. Right. You know, they look at that now and they go, it's corny. So there needs to be something now that's a little riskier.
We were the first generation, really, that grew up with friends that majorly came up from a single parent household.
Okay.
So I used to have a joke, like I can count on my hand
mm-hmm.
how many kids I grew up with who had both parents in the house.
Yeah.
And I, you know,
isn't that terrible?
That's terrible.
Yeah.
But it's only gotten worse. So it's not like, but having said that,
mm-hmm.
like those shows were out during that time.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So I don't think we should, there should be shows that reflect that side of life as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be shows that come out that reflect the other side with the two-parent house. I don't want to say that, you know, the right. There's no right or wrong in this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be both sides of the gambit.
Oh,
and,
I agree.
And I agree. And I don't think I've never watched any Tyler Perry shows, so I can't tell you what kind of dynamics is going on in mm-hmm. that family front.
His shows are built. His shows are built for people who love Tyler Perry stuff.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That's how I view it. I mean, because he does a certain style.
Okay.
I think he has a style.
Oh, yeah.
And his style is built for certain people. I'm not a fan of that style. That's just me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain movies I'm not gonna like, certain TV shows I'm gonna like, and I just don't really like some of his stuff. But then I like stuff like Precious, which he put his name to, or you know, or I thought The Family of Praise was interesting, and I thought Why Did I Get Married?
Yeah, do you see the trailer for the TV show?
No,
I haven't. Coming out for that, the trailer looks pretty good actually.
And see that kind of stuff is like, okay, yeah. All right, cool. I could dig that. You know, that's something we need to see. Well, I don't know, we need to see Precious because that shit was depressing.
Yeah, that shit was super depressing.
That was depressing, but it needed to be told.
Yeah.
But you know, I would love to see a new age Cosby. I would love to see a new age show that shows, especially black families.
Yeah.
In a different light. I mean, I thought it was interesting. We had a black couple doing a Mrs. Smith thing when they had Undercovers. I just felt that they could have taken it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
They could have done it a little differently. They didn't take any risks. It was a little cookie cutter.
It's a little cheese. Yeah, it was a little cheese, man.
A little cookie cutter. And you know, guess what? Moonlighting was for that time.
Yeah.
And you can't really, I mean, of course, these two were married, but there's just certain things you got to look at and do. And somebody's going to do it. Maybe you. You know, maybe you're the person that puts something out and go, hey, this is how this is going to be. Because who knew about The Wire?
Right.
I mean, that's a show I didn't watch The Wire. We talked about this. And everybody, all of my friends think I'm nuts. But I told y'all, I didn't like it until the fourth season, and that was with the kids.
That was a fantastic season. But you know, they took a risk with them as far as, like, with their casting. They cast a lot of raw...
young
actors,
yeah,
who weren't really that seasoned.
No,
and it could have turned people off who were used to seeing superior acting. Yeah. But it did lend a certain authenticity. Sorry, Jack Daniels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How Jack Daniels?
It lent that to it though.
Yeah,
that where their rawness was felt in their vulnerability.
I feel you.
You know what I'm saying?
I feel you.
So that was kind of like the yin and the yang of experiencing that show. But it was a great show, man. I just think that there has to be a yin and a yang. That you have to... I mean, I'm the most... And it's me writing stories like that is like surprising to me.
Okay.
Because I'm the most... I mean, I'm a vulgar guy. I talk a lot of shit. You know what I mean? I like guy stuff.
Yeah.
But
you need a balance.
Yeah, there's something inside of me that says that there has to be some kind of good messages out there.
Yeah.
And that if I have the ability to do it, then I'm gonna do it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I grew up watching that kind of stuff and influenced me. And people who look for guidance through entertainment, I feel like I have that duty to give that to them.
Well, you do. I think we all do in a certain respect, having responsibility to give back.
Right.
Now, I don't see why there can't be a new age, edgier version of Cosby. I don't see why you can't have a family that makes you go, wow, I've seen that family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had good times at one point. Right. And that was the lower, that was the other end of the spectrum when it came to Cosby.
Yeah.
You know, James couldn't get a job. I mean, every episode was James almost getting that job.
Right.
And not getting that job. And then, the worst thing of all time, he gets a job, and then he dies.
Right.
And then you're like, whoa. So
what part of the game is this?
And you gotta say, Good Times was about a family that really was struggling,
mm-hmm.
but they found a way to laugh and have a good time. And that's a message that will always go, and that's why you had Good Times, and you went to the other spectrum and saw the Jeffersons.
Right.
Then you had the Cosby Show, and those are three, especially Jeffersons and Cosby, longest running, most beloved televisions of all time.
Yeah.
Sanford and Son, too. Sanford and Son, Cosby, you know, all those. They had a certain feeling to them that you had to respect.
Cool. And right now, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Darn right, it's good talk.
Peace.
Mm-hmm. supposed to be my lover, my lover.
But the hide and seek is so unnecessary.
Scribbling with the scribe. We got some more scribbling to do.
I'm
if
scribbling.
I can talk.
I'm scribbling, my man.
I'm scribbling with the vocabulary right now.
Yeah, it's what it is.
Yeah. Now you said that you had set a goal for yourself to get on a copy show before you were 16.
Yep.
Looking at throughout your career, what has been your most favorite role or roles to play?
Oh wow, this is a good one. When I was in high school, near the end of high school, when I was right before I went to college, I did this show called Crisscross.
Crisscross.
Yeah, and that was also another one of my goals. I wanted to be the lead of my own series, of a series that I was
doing. That's a hell of a girl.
And I ended up being the lead of a series that shot in England.
Awesome.
And it was myself and Simon Fenton, who played Chris, because I played Oliver Cross. And then Rachel Blanchard played my love interest. And wow. It was a kid show, man, but we were, in my humble opinion, a really good kid show. We came up, we were out before City Guys even showed their head, because that City Guys, I felt, followed the same kind of model.
Okay.
Which was like two really good friends, one white, one black, and this sort of like boarding school sort of feel. And it's just fun to do, man. I mean, I went to England.
So that's a show that you were, I think you had found it on YouTube last year. You were excited about finding it on YouTube.
Yeah, Crisscross, yeah.
Yeah.
Found it
on
YouTube. Hilarious. It was like a couple of episodes. I had a box haircut.
I had one too.
Oh, man.
I had the Bobby Brown Gumby.
That's what I was about to say. Did you have the Gumby?
I had the Gumby, dog.
Hey, man.
Then I had the Tupac from Juice.
I
had the line going through the middle right here.
Yeah.
It was low in the front.
I think I tried to do that when I was doing Crisscross. I tried to do the Gumby.
Yeah.
Slightly didn't work.
Yeah.
And I tried to think I had to do... I think I tried the Bobby Brown for like a half a second, but... those were the 90s.
Those were the 90s, man.
Those were the 90s. I did that in 92, 93. 93. It was all 93. And... what I loved about it, man, was I got to go to England. I worked with some of the best people I know. It was just an experience. You know, I was 17 going on 18. And I was overseas in England. And, you know, it was just a different time. It was a different life.
So at that point, did you feel any pressure as far as, like, being the lead of a series like that?
No, man. You know, it's funny. I didn't.
That's good.
I felt great. I felt great. Because I thought it was a challenge.
Yeah.
It was a challenge to try to lead a show and because it wasn't just me, it was also Simon Fenton who played, you know, the other role.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked so good together. We had such great chemistry as castmates that I felt the show was a great children's show at its time. And I'm very proud of it. And I will say it's one of the best TV shows that went down. We just didn't get the respect. It was, he only did 13 episodes. So,
right.
You know, we didn't have a longevity of material. We didn't have a lot of material to show people, but I know people who've seen the show and have loved it or talk about it with such a nostalgic sort of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always going to make me feel good.
That says something about you, man, that even at 17, 16, 17, 18, that you were aware about putting out good content that was for kids or for teens.
And well, I appreciate it because, you know, right after that, while I was, no, not right after that, but I also did, you know, Sports Illustrated for Kids.
Yeah.
You know, I did that and that had nothing to do with acting. It had more everything to do with my love for sports.
Right, right.
And I got to interview Chris Webber. Chris Webber, Cheryl Swoops.
There's a YouTube with you with Steve Young.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, one of the greatest left-hand quarterbacks of all time.
Yes, it was. I've seen that before. That's hilarious.
I mean, you know, I took jobs for the challenge alone.
Right.
And, you know, being a host was a challenge. You know, it was a lot of fun. And I got to meet some of my childhood people. Like, I almost interviewed Michael Jordan, man.
Oh, boy.
I was sweating because I was like, please. It was myself and Rebecca Buddick, who was my my co-host, and we both kind of were fighting for that. And I just went to my boss and said, listen, she a little white girl. she may be sportsy or whatever you want to call it, but that's Michael Jordan.
That's right.
And
I
need to interview Michael Jordan.
Just kick the legs up under her.
Yeah, what's she going to say? What's she going to do? She going to sit there and say, oh, gee willikers. I mean, no.
No.
He needs me up there. And it also gave me, you know, it kind of gave me a lack of a better term because I've been drinking, a get out of free jail card to walk up to sports figures.
All right.
Like I walked up to AI right, I think he was right after his rookie year.
Okay.
And I said, listen, I walked up to him because we were in Philly. I jumped out of my, I was in my boy's car on the passenger side. I said, AI.
Yeah.
He turned around, he saw me, and I said, come here. And he started stepping, then he stepped back, like, what?
Right.
Who are you? And his boy's like, yo, I know that dude, man. No, it's all good. I said, yo, I want to interview you, man.
Right.
I mean, I had that as an opening.
Right, that's awesome.
And I was like, yo, I interview Chris Webber. He's like, oh, man, talk to my boy Q. You know, we'll try to get that done. We never got that done. I was upset. I met Kevin Garnett that same way when Kevin Garnett and Stephon Marbury were together. And I saw them, and I was like, I do this kid show. And you would have to be an asshole not to want to do a kid show.
Yeah.
As a sportsman, especially sportsman.
Yeah, that's the ace in your pocket.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I interviewed Karl Malone.
Did you really?
Yeah. I got a picture of me and Karl Malone, man.
This when he had like the box, the curly top box.
Man, nah, this is when it was a little short. It was shorter. It was near the end.
Okay.
That man, he was about to go fishing.
Yeah, right. He was
for real. Not the golf fishing for playoffs.
No.
He was really about to go fishing.
In that bayou.
Yes. He was like, I'm done.
Hilarious.
And remember Dave and Dan?
Of course.
Interviewed Dan.
Hilarious. Remember I put that we shot that short. Remember I had to cutaway. Remember I had them reference in that short.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, we're old.
Yeah, we're old, man. I even interviewed Mia Hamm.
Really?
Around the same time that they went and won Olympics.
That wasn't too long ago though. That was like
It was like 98. I did it in 99, man.
When she took off a shirt and like did the slide.
Was that her?
That was her. That was Mia Hamm.
Oh, I thought that was Christy Brittany Chastain. Wasn't that
that was Mia Hamm, I think. Oh, don't quote me.
That was Chastain, but man.
That's awesome.
I almost had Clemens.
Wow.
Pre any situation.
Pre-roids.
Yes.
Or,
well,
allegedly.
Allegedly. Pre-roids. I mean, or actually allegedly during roids.
Right.
But, man, you know, I have to say, without acting, without this career, I wouldn't have. I did a kids TV, no, kids movie of the week where the writer wrote a book called The Alienist.
Uh-huh.
And he dedicated it to me and the rest of the kids of that particular
movie. Wow.
That's so awesome. They're like things that, I mean, I kind of like cool. Like, I'm a nerd, you know, I'm a whatever anybody want to call it. So things like that excite me.
It should. I mean, you got to be a nerd at something in life to be great at it. So nerd just means you're well studied on certain subjects.
Exactly.
And we all have our thing, man.
Yeah, man.
Who's been I'm not going to say most favorite actor to work with, or I can't ask that.
Mm, okay.
Or who was a person who would be like, wow, I'm doing the same with that guy?
Dude. I saw Blazing Saddles. I think you had too.
Yeah.
And it was Cleavon Little. Well, I was one. Cleavon Little.
Yeah.
Working with Cleavon Little. And Cleavon Little telling me when I was a child, telling Moses Gunn, who was in Good Times and all this stuff, told Moses Gunn, you know, and this boy get older, he's going to be a formidable actor.
That's awesome.
That was like, wow, you said this. Johnny Depp. I got to work with Johnny Depp.
Oh.
And I remember when he walked up to me, he said, hi, I'm Johnny Depp. I was like, I know who you are.
Hilarious.
Because in my mind, I'm like, I'm working with Johnny Depp.
Right.
I mean, Johnny Depp, Lance Henriksen, There was a movie called Dead Man. And I did Sleepers, but I never got to meet Brad Pitt, but I worked with Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, we just watched that the
other night.
Probably like another month, yeah. A month ago, yeah. It's funny, man, like when you meet people who you've been looking up to per se.
Yeah.
And they introduce themselves.
Oh, like, it's weird.
Yeah.
Because you go, I know who you are.
Yeah.
It's like
it's still cool, they still do it. Oh, it's like, still cool. They could just give you like the head nod, like to give, shake your hand, like yeah. But when you meet somebody, it's like, yeah, hi, I'm so and so and so. Hey, I'm so and so too. You know what I mean?
It's
pretty.
I mean, I got one as a. I got two instances.
Right.
I did a extra work when I was a kid in a movie called Witness.
Harrison Ford.
Hilarious. I met, and he was the nicest dude. And all I kept remembering is like, Han Solo,
dude. I met him once. I was doing extra work when I first moved out here.
Uh-huh.
It's the first show I did out here, and I got my SAG voucher. If you need to get the SAG voucher and shit. And it was Hollywood Homicide with Harrison Ford.
Oh, him and Josh Hartnett. Josh Hartnett. Yeah.
So the next day, they called everybody back, and it was only about like maybe like 10 extras, and just those two guys. So we were sitting there. Hi, I really admire your art. He was so cool with it, but it was like, this is fucking Indiana Jones. This is fucking Jack Ryan, it's Han Solo. And I'm the biggest Han Solo nerd. Everybody knows I love Han Solo. Yep.
And that's why I was sitting there like, you'll appreciate this. And to jump forward in life,
yeah,
I had a bunch of scenes with a guest star of a series that I was doing. I had Billy Dee Williams.
Oh, shit.
So I worked with Lando Calrissian.
That's hilarious.
And I sat down with him. I said, look, man. Denzel. Love Denzel.
Right.
But you the OG.
But, yeah, right.
You were the one that women screamed out, Billy Dee!
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was like, hey. He said, hey, how you doing? I'm Billy Dee Williams. Hilarious. And I was like, you are, man. You Billy Dee Williams, man.
He had that smooth play. He was a smooth player, man. And how you gonna like be a smooth player and pump Colt 45?
Because you can be smooth on and coat. Pump. Because he goes, you know what? I'm hanging out with my friends. He said, and it gets late at night and we like to party. I just like to pull out that cool can of Colt 45. It's like, you sat there and you were like, yo, this man.
That's hilarious.
You tell me a commercial now where you got somebody pumping Colt 45 and it's moving.
Yes.
It's moving like Coca-Cola.
He's preaching.
The only person that even has something similar is, it's not even similar, but Ice Cube with that Coors Light. And that's not a malt liquor. No. He pumped a malt liquor with a bull on it.
Malt liquor, Colt 45. Do they still even make Colt 45?
Man, Billy Dee ain't hocking it no more because they ain't done.
Billy Dee, yo. That's an awesome experience, yo.
I've been lucky that I've had the opportunity to meet great people, man. And thank God I love the business. And so meeting these people was... Man, it was a pleasure, man. And as a nerd, it was. I met Bill Bixby,
fucking the Hulk.
The Hulk, man. Yeah. He showed me his eye. He's like, you want to see it turn green? And I was like, yeah.
Is it? You know what? It's been a blessing. You've been able to work with those people, man. But it's also, it's just a testament to how good you are too.
Oh man,
you should knock yourself.
Well, like, you know, man, I appreciate that. You know, and. The thing is, I'm always learning. I was sitting down with one of my boys last night. Mm-hmm. I was sitting down with, and we were talking about it. And I said, you know, then nothing makes me feel happier. Even though, like, even when I struggle and things are going hard in this business, nothing makes me feel happier than watching my boys succeed, man.
That's
awesome. And I got two friends right now, three of them, you know, because, you know, Oski is he's doing his thing,
mm-hmm.
But I got two other dudes, you know, Mackie and Missick, who two of the hardest working dudes I know, and deservedly are starting to get a lot of props and a lot of people noticing them, and it makes me happy to see that, man. Not jealous, not envious. You know, some people think you know, when things aren't going well for you or you're not as big as your friends, you think, ah, oh, you must be getting better. I was like, nah, trust me, I'm not.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no room for it. You know, there's no room for it. You know, if I got to feel like AI felt. I mean, AI said it one time best. He said, Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player of all time. But when I step on the floor with him and Charles Barkley, whoever, that respect goes out the window. Have to win.
It has to.
Because I'm the best player on the floor. Right. And if you don't go in there like that, then you are not going to win. So while I respect and love my boys and happy for them, I believe in myself in my own right.
As you should.
Everybody should.
That's just because we all are striving to be great, man. Exactly. And like we said earlier, that's why we probably all get along.
Yeah.
Because we sense a certain we're chasing history.
Yeah.
Like we're sitting there, we just had a conversation that's trying to wanting to take place in rerouting how entertainment is for black folk, black entertainment on television. Like we was like, yo, I haven't sold anything yet as a writer, but I have the confidence knowing that, yo, I want to be the person that tries to change that tide.
I agree.
And it's like, and we have to have that kind of confidence.
You have to.
You have to. Because, if you're just creating just to keep up with the Joneses, man, then you'll sound normal. You'll be regular.
You will be the same.
Yeah.
As everybody else.
Yeah, man.
And there's nothing unique about you. I mean, what has to be unique is your vision of the world and your vision for yourself and what you feel like you can contribute. And this is no other way to be.
There we go.
Yeah, man.
Yo, man. You know what? We're gonna do a part two of this at some point, man. Yeah. This is a pilot episode.
Yeah, this is actually fun, man. And of course, we had technical difficulties.
We had some technical difficulties. We had a lot of stuff going on, man. I promise you, at some point, I'm gonna figure out how to work this MacBook Pro because it is owning me right now. It's owning me.
You know, man. I wish I could have figured it out a little bit better than I did tonight, because the Mac genius in me, hello Joy. is a little annoyed the fact that I couldn't figure this one out.
I should probably call her or hit her up.
Could have called Joy.
Yeah. Joy. Hello, Joy. Shout out to Joy.
Yeah, shout out to Joy Talent. Yeah. Very, very talented. Very smart individual.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. She's one of my really good friends and smart as hell. And screw you, Giants. San Francisco Giants. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, we don't do that. Brother, I appreciate you, man. Yes, and sir. I'm going to shake your hand. And whether you believe it or not, man, Eugene Bird. You are a legend, man.
Oh, man.
No, I'm serious.
No, I'm
serious.
I appreciate it.
You are, man. And
I'm like Harrison Ford in an interview. I'm
for real. Like, people will recognize, like, look at the body of work, and I'm always going to try to bring people who I feel need to be brought out and respected, because, like, the people who need to get respected don't get enough pub, props, and all that shit, and that's what I'm just trying to bring out, the real artists. That I know, and hopefully the best of my generation, man. So I appreciate you for this. And we're going to do a part two, and we'll probably get more personal.
Yeah.
Me and this guy, we are, how we really bonded, man. This is about going on another tangent.
No, go ahead.
I know we met, you got out here when?
I got out in 2003. I met you in 2004, Holly Street.
Pasadena,
at a bar. Oski, because Dorian brought me out there. Yeah. Met Oski.
Was Jonte there or something?
Was Jonte there? I don't remember.
I don't know if he was or not.
I remember Mark.
Mark.
Being there.
It might have been Mark.
Oh, no. Who's the dude, writer, white boy, tall?
Oh.
Yeah. That's who.
My arch rival.
Yeah. First of all, by the way, they can't be arch rivals if he's not Moriarty.
Yeah, but he accused me of stealing an idea from him.
Oh, you know all that is? Hater.
He's a hater, man.
He's a hater.
He's
not an arch rival.
Because you know me, I'm not somebody who's gonna steal anything from anybody.
Oh, of course, but
if you have a great idea, I will give you the props.
Exactly, but you know as well as I do, to be an arch rival, they have to matter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know what I mean? You don't see Batman get upset because Roachman came in. And,
that's true.
Yeah, and
that's
like,
very true.
And Roachman took a dump on his floor. He's going to be like, my arch rival came in and took a dump on his Roachman. I'm like, nah.
I was going to name my production company. Oh, I guess I stole this too.
It like have like a guy like a crook. It's like the little image with it, just running with the idea, a bag of ideas, of shitty ideas. The bag, like the bag burst and this drags shit all over the floor. I was gonna name it. Oh, I guess I stole this too.
That would have been funny as hell.
I still might do it.
I think you should have a DBA. I still doing might. Business ads.
I still might do that.
You might. Yeah. Say to do that.
But yeah, we've known each other since 04. And
man,
we bonded over video games. We are, me and him have the longest. Bounce. We have rivalries.
We are the Lakers and the Celtics, except I hate the Celtics because I'm from Philly.
Yeah.
But it really is Magic versus Bird.
It's fucking
Bird. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I never thought about it. Coach Bird. Yeah.
But me and him, we play and we will go 2 days without talking.
Vicious.
Pissed off at each other, man. But
vicious.
It's all because we're just very competitive. Man.
Exactly. And then we became coaches.
Yeah, we coached some 8, 9-year-old kids.
Yep. And some grown men.
And some, yeah.
And was undefeated until little things transpired.
Yeah.
But,
you know.
We're winners. And we work hard.
We work very hard. We actually work well together, man. Because Eugene is more vocal, and I'm more like Tex Winter, where I don't really like doing like a lot of communicating, but I can kind of see shit. Yeah. And he's a great communicator, man.
Unfortunately, I think my style, I sound like Stan Van Gundy because I'm screaming all the time.
Who gives a fuck?
But I think I would hope my mind is more Phil Jackson and a little bit more Pat Riley.
Yeah,
I'll take those two.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that
maybe
works.
Bill Belichick. I'm a defensive guy. I'm a defensive guy. So, yeah.
That's where we really bonded at, man. And out of that, met a great friend, and I appreciate you, brother, man.
Hey, man, you know I appreciate you too, man. You know I'm gonna do this again.
And that's it.
And the second part, if you want to talk about sports,
we'll do it.
And you want to talk about video games, especially NBA 2K, we can get it in.
Yeah, I don't want that, man. They don't want that.
They don't want that. I'm a legend.
Hey, and you can find me if you want to knuckle up. Hit me up on I'm Hit Reset on Xbox. He ain't gonna give his shit out
because I'm not like because but, I'm just not that. I'm not that guy.
You ain't gonna beat me, so don't even worry about it. But all about man, this is the
I'll inaugural for you.
Hilarious. we'll see. it's the inaugural session, the pilot of Scribbling with the Scribe. I really can't promise how often I'm going to do the show because it depends on if I get guests or not. So we'll figure it out. Eugene will probably definitely be back, and we'll give you another episode, man. But until then, take it easy and
peace.
So there you have it, the first episode of Scribbling with the Scribe. With my guest, Eugene Bird. I wanted to thank you, man. Thanks for coming through and looking out for your boy. Hopefully you guys learned something from him. He's a great dude, great actor, man. And become a fan. Check out Bones. It's a Fox show. And it's one of the better shows on TV. Hopefully become a fan of my show, which I will try to do as often as I can. Like I said, again, it depends on when I can get guests or whatnot. Hopefully, I will grow. It will get better. And if we end up getting a nice flow and find our groove, I will invite Eugene back, and we can do it again at the top of our game. So, you know, pilot episodes are always tricky. And, I wouldn't pick the better person to do a pilot with, my boy Eugene. So there you go. Scribbling with the Scribe. Check me out on scribeslife.com. And check me out on my Twitter, scribeslife. Check out our other podcasts, Real Sessions with Oski and the Scribe. They all can be found on iTunes. Subscriptions and likes and all that stuff, they do matter. And we appreciate it if you could do that. So thank you for your time. And I hope you enjoyed it again. And I am out. Peace.
Don't judge me. I know this girl, she a real good girl. And she be low-key looking like a star with a real nice car. A Mercedes key, and she got a nigga, and she love this nigga. Well, at least I think every time we bark, she pays no mind. In the middle of the street, she be like,
fuck them other niggas, cause I'm down for my nigga. Fuck them other niggas, cause I'm down for my nigga. Fuck them other niggas, I ride for my nigga. I die for my nigga. Fuck the mother.
Until one day, he wasn't acting right. In the middle of the night, she checked his phone. Erica Wright. When he played the fifth man, it was on. Matter of fact, she gone. Matter of fact, Tyrone was on ski dial. So when she got home, it was going down. She go,
fuck that other nigga when she tired of her nigga. Fuck that other nigga when she tired of her nigga. Fuck that other nigga when she tired of her nigga. Sick of lies from her nigga. Fuck that other.
I know this girl, she a real hood girl. And she with the shit, keep her hair tied up. Big bamboos, Mike Jordan kicks with that big butt. But when I try holla, she gon' resist and her man she trust. So when I walk by her, she be screaming this, she be like,
fuck them other niggas, cause I'm down for my nigga. Fuck them other niggas, cause I'm down for my nigga. Fuck them other niggas, I ride for my nigga. I die for my nigga. Fuck the mother.
Until one day, he wasn't acting right. In the middle of the night, she checked his pockets, found condoms by Magnum, and a moment they was acknowledged. She popped his side, then ran outside, then started driving on the passenger side. Homeboy was smiling, she go,
fuck that other nigga when she tired of her nigga. Fuck that other nigga when she tired of her nigga. Fuck that other nigga when she tired of her nigga. Sick of lies from her nigga. Fuck that other.
And so these girls, these vulnerable girls, took they men back, put them in their world, they vulnerable world. And just like that, it was on again, got they feelings hurt. Tell me how that sound. They got fed up with the biggest question mark. They curious now, cause when woman gets sick of men, they think of a big helping hand to lend each other. Uncover emotions when life's dim. So when she telling her to come over, it'll be alright. The minute she hit the block and turn left, she be turning dyke. They go,
fuck with other bitches when they tired of these niggas. Fuck with other bitches when they tired of these niggas. Fuck with other bitches on the side of these niggas.
Tammy song.